It's time for the Sandler Training Hour on Newstalk 670 KBOI. Here's your host, Jim Stevens.
Welcome to the weekend. Each week I invite a keynote Sandler trainer to discuss strategies to improve behavior, attitude, and technique using the proven and highly successful Sandler system. This week my guest is Bob Bullock. Bob recently did a talk at a conference that I attended regarding the value of vulnerability in not only a sales role, but also in a leadership role. So I've asked Bob to be on the program today to help us better understand, number one, how do I become vulnerable? Because frankly, that's not something most of us seek to do or even know how to. And what would be the value of that? So Bob, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Jim.
So kick us off here by helping us understand just conceptually what opened your eyes to make you say, you know what, vulnerability is an ingredient that's necessary in somebody who's in sales.
You know, Jim, I started in my Sandler business actually 5 years ago to the day from today, and I'm looking at a picture right now of me sitting there in my basement home office, and I'm there making dials with no money, no clients, and also no friends, because I had just moved to this place to start my business, and I knew absolutely nobody.
Oh my gosh. I thought,
Jim, about how scared I was, about how worried I was about my future success. I was the opposite of vulnerable. I didn't have a background in Sandler, so this wonderful system had a chance to really come in and overtake all of my fears and self-limiting beliefs. And so as I began to look at our business grow to the point where we're now, you know, getting awards with the major Sandler players around the world, really examined what were some of the things that were intangibles that contributed to that, Jim. And just give you a quick example. I am a introverted kind of dominant communication style. So that would be somebody that would, the last thing they would ever do would be to, you know, show their cards, show any emotion. And the first year in business. And so I hope it's appropriate to share, Jim, you know, 1 year in my business, we lost my dad to cancer. And, you know, he was elderly, but it was obviously a traumatic thing to lose a family member. 6 weeks later, we had the 1,000-year flood in Boulder, Colorado, lost the lower third of our home, my son's bedroom, possessions, absolutely, you know, devastating to it. And then, I guess another 6 weeks later, we lost my mom to illness.
Oh, and, you know,
standing on a stage in front of a room full of people and sharing that, Jim, is something I never would have done, much less the thousands of people that are there listening in your audience today.
Yeah.
So just, I share that because my belief now is that we're not conditioned as salespeople to be vulnerable. We're not conditioned as leaders to be vulnerable. We're not conditioned as men to
right.
be vulnerable. And it's a real problem because there's so much power as you explore this topic.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point. We are hardwired to hide our weaknesses because we don't want anybody to see that we struggle with fill in the blank. But if you think about it, everybody learns from failure, and the best way to learn is from someone else's failure. And if you can have someone who's willing to share, hey, here's the struggle I went through, here's the breakthrough I got and how I got it, you're really giving a gift to your fellow men and women in helping them realize, I guess maybe it's okay for me to struggle with this or that. That vulnerability, that transparency about the emotional challenges that you go through can be very, very encouraging to others. So I really commend you for that courage to do it. And I have to say, as somebody who has heard you give this talk, it really inspired me.
Well, thanks, Jim. And one of the things we might just touch on is for the person that's listening to my voice right now, you know, why might it be difficult for you to be vulnerable? You might conjure up words or adjectives related to vulnerability like fear, shame, grief, you know, uncertainty. A couple of my favorites are risk, exposure, and humiliation. So as I dove into this topic, I examined this idea of humiliation really versus the root word, which is humility, and really what's the difference. And I think that we're conditioned that, you know, humility might be a bad thing, but what I've discovered is that humility is not only the acceptance, Jim, or awareness of the things that I need to improve at. Humility is also the acceptance and understanding of the things that, quite frankly, I'm awesome at. Mm. It's that balance and yin and yang. So I don't know if I can practice vulnerability without acknowledging both sides of humility. And I don't know how that maybe struck you as you initially had heard us speak about this.
Yeah, some of us have a very active ego and we don't mind sharing our own greatness. I've been been accused from time to time of being a legend in my own mind. I can spin my own grandeur, but it's really having the ability to share your successes in a way that doesn't showcase you as the star of the show. I was recently at a talk where this very, very successful business executive, he has been the CEO of many multi-million dollar companies and has bought and sold them, gave a talk about his role as a father. And every single person I talked to after that left feeling guilty and condemned because every story was about how he was a great father and he set the bar so high. I think it made people feel like I could never do that. And I think had he just added this element you're suggesting of sharing his successes with some humility that says, I don't know that this would work for you, but here's what I found successful. That would have made a big difference.
Well, this is an important topic, Jim, or an important piece of the topic, in that in Sandler, we're constantly asking ourselves, what is the intent? What is the intent of the prospect? But what is my own intent? And, you know, as we get into it, we have our emotional states of our parental scripting and our childlike reactions, right? And then our adult ego state, which is really objective, right? And non-judgmental. And if it's just a simple acknowledgement of, hey, I have these strengths, I'm not putting them out there to either diminish someone else or build my own self up emotionally, it's an acknowledgement of reality. And when I can begin to look at not only the positives of my makeup that way, but also the areas where I may fall a little bit short, boy, it is just so humanizing, authentic, and it's a real magnet because we just don't see it that much out there. And in a sales role, oh gosh, the power that you have to be an authentic person. Gosh, it's just amazing.
And I think the buyers see that. They see that I'm in front of somebody instead of they're following a script or using a presentation that they've canned and repeated over and over. I'm really sensing their openness. And if I'm open or the person I'm talking to is open, it makes me want to be open. My guest today is Bob Bullock. We're talking about humility and transparency and vulnerability and the roles that those have in not only sales but also leadership. When we get back from the break, I'm going to ask Bob to share with us a little more about this concept. Psychologists call it transactional analysis. Bob mentioned that most of what we do in an average day is a programmed response, and what we need to do if we're going to open ourselves to transparency and vulnerability, we've got to take a step back and we've got to be willing to engage in a totally different way, disconnect from our programmed response, and start looking and acting and feeling in a different way. So, Bob, give your contact information in case there's somebody there who would like to reach out to you.
Yeah, best way to reach me, Jim, is B. Bolak. That's B as in boy, another B as in boy, O-L-A-K at Sandler.com.
I appreciate that. I'm Idaho's Sandler trainer, Jim Stevens. Visit our website at www.crossroads.sandler.com and download the three biggest mistakes salespeople should never make. For specific questions or comments, call us at 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. As a business owner or manager, do you have that gnawing feeling in your gut that says something's just not right? It's not uncommon to be so immersed in the daily battle that you're unaware of the small changes you could make that would produce a significant return on investment. I'm Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. We are a training and consulting firm who specialize in helping businesses increase gross and net profit, cash flow, and referrals generated from stellar customer service. Listen to my friend and client Brandon Wright, the owner of Ultra Clean, share his experience with Sandler Training.
I did $1.7 million when I met you, had 26 employees, and after my coaching with you, we grew another million with 16 employees. So 10 less employees, we did another million. So what does that tell you? It means I was doing something wrong.
If you're courageous enough to face what you may not know that could hurt you, give me a call. Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. Crossroads.sandler.com. Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. With the baby boomer generation maturing, 8 million businesses will be sold or closed in the next 10 years. 75% of those companies have business owners who want to sell their business, but only 20% of them will be successful. If you're a business owner who's thinking about selling or transitioning your firm to your employees, and you're not sure if you'll be able to achieve your dream of a successful transition, call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. I will help you determine what actions will be required to position your business for a successful transition. Our initial no-cost analysis will help you see the four steps required to achieve success. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, we're ready to help. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. And welcome to Entrepreneur Radio, where we get to learn more about the heroes of economy and society. These are independent business owners and leaders. I'm Jim Stevens with Sandler Training, and we've invited Tommy Ahlquist, who is running for the governor of the state of Idaho on the Republican ticket, to join us. Entrepreneur Radio, we share some of the strategies that have led to business success, some of the hardships that have brought them along the way. And the best way to learn, I think, is by hearing the stories and life lessons from peers who are fighting the day-to-day battle for personal business growth. One thing I love about this interview with Tommy is we get to hear how someone has grown from a real entrepreneur to somebody who wants to make a big change in our society. Welcome, Tommy.
Hey, thank you, Jim. Thanks for allowing me to be here.
So give us an overview. Take us back to your early beginnings. How in the world did an ER doctor become an entrepreneur and now is running for the governor of Idaho?
Well, thanks. A little bit about me. I grew up on a kind of small farm in Hunter, Utah, and first came to Idaho in the 80s and played basketball, then went away to medical school and residency. But I always was entrepreneurial. I go back to even in high school, I had my own lawn mowing business and actually had about 35 clients. I'd mow their lawn every week. And all the way through school, I had my own side businesses and loved working for myself and loved talking about new ideas or ways to make money. Right. So one of the reasons I chose emergency medicine and I moved here in 99 and began practicing medicine was that what did give you some flexibility. You know, I did night shifts
right
in the ER or weekends. And then during the week, you had all this time off where you could take some of that pent up, those ideas and go do them. So I've seen over 40,000 patients in the ER here. I loved medicine, loved everything about it, but it allowed me to start several businesses on the side. So the first one I started up here was in 2001. It was called StatPads. It's the nation's largest provider of service for automated external defibrillator programs in the United States. Mm. We cover over 65,000 AEDs, and it's been a great business. It started as an idea, and then really kind of just with kind of drive and passion and a good idea, good people around you. We've developed a great business here that's thriving. It was very fun. It was more of a med tech business.
Mm-hmm.
It involved software. It involved relationships and kind of nationally going out and pitching a program or an idea. I've started some traditional businesses too. Started a pharmacy and a health clinic. But then probably the one that I'm most known for is 12 years ago here by St. Luke's Meridian. There was 25 acres subdivision, and I started a commercial real estate company that started with an idea, which was leaving the ER in the morning and driving through the subdivision every day. I thought, boy, if anyone could ever buy all these homes, this could be a great project. And it was. You know, I went door to door, met with all the people, and put together that 25-acre project, which is now Portico, where Buffalo Wild Wings is, and there's eight buildings
right,
there.
Right.
And that was the start of kind of a love affair with commercial real estate. It met my personality because it's challenging. You see a problem or a project, you go figure it out, you pull it together, you finance it, you build it, and I've really, really enjoyed it. So kind of quietly did a lot of square footage until we did the 8th and Main building, the Zions Bank building downtown, and then we just finished City Center Plaza, and it's been wonderful. 2.5 million square feet we've done in Idaho.
Wow.
We've invested about $331 million, and it has been, it's been a ride. It's been fantastic.
So are you still practicing medicine?
So it was crazy. I did both for a long, long time. So I would work Friday nights from 5 till 2 in the morning, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then I would do my other work during the week, and I did that for years, and it wasn't until about 4 years ago where I had everything going on that I finally said, I've got to stop. So I miss it.
Yeah.
People ask me all the time, do I miss seeing patients? There is nothing in all the things I've done in my life, the one-on-one interaction that happens in an emergency room with someone in their time of greatest need, and you're able to help them, there's nothing that replaces that. However, the business of medicine changed, became frustrating, and so as far as missing that, you know, I don't really miss some of the business of medicine.
Right.
But there's nothing like patient care.
And forgive me for the stereotype casting, but I don't usually think of an ER doctor as entrepreneurial. Are you unique in that sense, do you think?
I don't think I am, actually. So most of my partners, and it's kind of what attracts you to that field of medicine, there's a lot of entrepreneurial activity amongst ER docs.
Huh.
Patents,
oh,
businesses.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason why is you have shift work, so you have this time. And with that time, you can either go get really, really good at fly fishing or golfing, which is not a bad path either.
Right, right.
Or you can go start some businesses. And so I've got several of my partners who have done some amazing things over the years. And that energy that I think is there, it's a problem solving. Every room you walk in is a different interaction. You need to know a lot about a lot of things. It's high stakes. It's high pressure. So I think it lends itself to people that
really
are
does.
Creative.
And being a business manager, a business owner, requires that kind of decisiveness that would be needed for an ER room.
It does. You know, people ask me all the time, what is the secret to success in business? And what makes a difference? And to me, it's pretty clear. Number one is relationships. And you think back to an ER, but you better be very good at walking in and communicating and listening.
Mm.
And oftentimes what people are telling you on their chief complaint or why they say they're there has nothing to do with why they're really there. So I think you get really good quickly at reading people, at judging why they're there, at connecting on some level. And that's important in business too.
Right,
think about
right.
all the relationships
wow.
you have and walking into a room and trying to understand people. The next thing is on relationships, it's how you treat people. That first impression, that second impression, and are you genuine? Do you care?
Mm.
People read that. And
that's
the same in business too.
Same in business.
And then it's work ethic, right? I don't know of anyone in business that's an entrepreneur, that's what this program's about, that hasn't worked their tail off. Risked everything, laid in bed and thought, how on earth do I make payroll? How on earth do I make this? How am I going to finance this problem? And, you know, and I've had over the years, so many people come to me and say, I've got an idea. You know, what do you think about this? I always encourage them to do it, but I always tell them this, it's going to take you 10 times longer and cost about 10 times more than you think. So just be ready for that. It's hard. It's hard to start businesses. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of self-determination.
You own multiple businesses. You employ what? Several businesses, 50, 100 people.
Yeah, yeah.
And your businesses have infused, what, $330 million into Idaho just on your real estate business?
Yeah, just on my real estate business.
Why in the world would you run for governor?
You know, I'm 49 years old, and I think I've got a pretty unique history and background.
Yes.
I love this state. I love the people of this state. I look at our heritage, our values, the work ethic, the people, the businesses of this state, and what I see is potential. So as a businessman, as an ER doc, as a community servant, I see the chance for Idaho to do some great things. I think we need a statewide plan on vision on things that really matter. Education, healthcare, jobs. We're 44th in median wage. You know, you look at our graduation rates, we're 43rd in high school graduation.
Hmm.
19% of our kids graduate college and career ready. There's a lot of work to be done, but that's possible. We're small, we're nimble, we're Idaho. So this opportunity that exists with Governor Otter coming to the end of his term, I think bringing some of this business idea, an outsider look, I'm not a politician. I'm the farthest thing from a politician. I haven't planned on doing this my whole life.
Mm.
But I think you bring some of the principles that make you successful in business. People always say, what are the keys to success in business? Well, it's the same keys to success in your house, in your own home, in your business, and what you do in life. It is a shared vision. Can you get people on the same page with clarity? Then you need a plan of how you're going to go about it. And then it's work. It's hard work. It's action. It's drive. It's getting there early before everyone gets there and leaving after everyone leaves. And if you follow that principle, you'll be successful. That will work in government too. So the reason why is because we have a lot to do. We have a lot of great things we can do in the state. And I think that opportunity drives me.
What was the tipping point that made you say, there's a void here. Somebody needs to fill it. I'll do it.
You know, I think for over a decade being involved and seeing how things happen as an outsider, you always complain a little bit. You say,
right,
boy,
right.
I wish it were different.
Yeah. Especially I would think as a developer,
yeah,
right?
You
get to see the inside and out of City Hall and planning and zoning and
you get to see it all.
Politics.
And then you see healthcare, you see how all this happens. And then you look at your life and you say, you know what? I've got a pretty unique background that can be used for good. I think all of us want to make a difference in the world. I think all of us want to make a difference in our community. What's fun for me is I've gone around the state and met a lot of people. People will often say to me, why on earth are you doing this? And I look at them and I say, well, look at what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at what you're doing to make a difference in the lives of entrepreneurs, for example. I mean, you're spending your time and your commitment, your effort to make a difference and help them. It's that same fire that burns to make a difference that's there for me.
So on the Republican ticket, you're going against a couple of proven politicians, Brad Little and Raul Labrador. How are you going to compete with the folks that already know the ropes and they know the game?
So I think people are a little tired of the game, right? So I think
amen.
I think there is a game, right? And I think that elections in our democracy are about choices. So my plan in the next 10 months is to just get out who I am. We're in Idaho. People still want to meet you. But I think that comparison will be politicians from near and far. We've got, you know, Brad is a very good man, but he's been in this a long time. And then you've got Raul, who's been in Washington, D.C. for a long time. And then you're going to have a business outsider that's going to come in with some fresh ideas and a new approach. And that will be the choice. I am not afraid of some of the challenges I'll have as a newcomer, because it's going to be working with a legislature. I believe that there are a lot of really good people with good ideas. And I think the executive branch of government can work with the legislature very well. I think that there's nothing wrong with shaking up the way we do things either, and coming in and looking at, okay, what are the ways to streamline government? What's the proper role of government? How do we help businesses thrive? I hope when I'm done as my terms as governor, that I'll be seen as the small business governor, the guy that really helps small business. You know, the economy of Idaho rests on the backs of small business, period. It's where the jobs come from. It's where the wages come from to pay for the benefits. Anything we can do as a state government to get out of the way when we should get out of the way.
Yeah.
And then when we are in the way, we need to be excellent. We need to streamline government to help small business. That will be my focus.
What's your strategy to drive that wedge into the political machine? Because it seems to me that both of these people you're up against have created a following that is going to be pretty easy to turn on, and here you have to play catch up.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, here I am coming in. You know, I'm going to be spending my own money. I'm going to be raising a lot of money from people that believe in me. Mm. And we're going to go right down the middle of these politicians that do. And the other things is they're incumbents, right? So their machine is funded also by taxpayer dollars. I mean, they've been there a long time, and they've got a name ID. There's a pathway forward. I'm a smart enough guy to know that we've polled and looked. There is a definite pathway. If we keep our head down, if we meet as many people as we can, get our message out, and if we spend our money right and get the word out, we can absolutely do this.
So share with us, just in the last couple of minutes that we have, Tommy, you mentioned that entrepreneurs really are the lifeblood of our economy. Where does that passion for the entrepreneur come from, and cast the vision for us of the future of Idaho?
So one of the things that really gets me going, as I launched my campaign, we went on a 97 town tour in 75 days, and I interviewed over 100 businesses. Mm. I was telling you that tour is over, but just in the last day, I went and visited two businesses in eastern Idaho, which just, it inspires me to see people who have taken all the risk, who have signed on those loans, who have taken all their treasure and put it towards an idea, and then worked their tail. That's where the jobs come from in the United States of America.
Right.
That's what makes America great. That entrepreneurial spirit of taking an idea, creating something fantastic, and then what's great about most business guys I know is that's not enough for them. What I love to be inspired by, and I was yesterday, is you take these great families who have risked everything, created jobs for people, and then once they start making money, guess what they do with that money? They give it back.
Right.
They recycle it. They do wonderful things all over the United States and world with their money. That's what America's built on. And too often we talk about the government solving problems, but it is the people, it are the businesses, it's the entrepreneurs in this state and in this country that really drive everything.
What advice would you give to somebody who's a small business owner thinking about taking a plunge and making some risk?
So risk is interesting, right? I mean, maybe just really quickly, I know it's not what we're talking about, but we're in the longest recovery since 1945 right now.
Hmm.
I mean, our recovery right now is the longest we've ever had. So the first advice I'd give is just make sure that you're looking at, okay, when is there going to be the next little dip we're going to have? Because I hate, you know, having gone through the last recession, and I'll tell you what, when I was curled up in a little ball on my bed wondering how on earth you're going to get through that next day, and you just dig in and work hard.
Been there, done that.
Right? There's going to be another little dip. But with that said, I think if you're smart about how you invest, how you structure your debt, how you save cash, how you get ready to go, and then believe in your ideas, believe in yourself, and surround yourself with the best people you can. I think in my life, the successes I've had, it's been because I've surrounded myself with really, really good people and partners. And some of the struggles I've had have been times when I haven't. So those would be the biggest ideas. Make sure you have good vision, drive, believe in yourself, but judge risk, and then surround yourself with the best people you can.
Awesome.
And then work your tail off, and you'll be successful.
Tommy Ahlquist. Tommy, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
So TommyForIdaho.com. Email, we respond within 24 hours. We'd love to have as many people involved in our campaign as we can. Follow us on social media, but TommyForIdaho.com, and all our connections are right there.
Great interview, and thank you so much for being on the program. On Entrepreneur Radio, we share the stories of local and regional leaders and individuals who drive change to see how they've achieved success. If you'd like to hear how we can help, call us at 208-429-9275. We'll look for reasons together on why we shouldn't have a meeting, and if we can't find one, we'll get together. Thank you all. Have you noticed that you can smell a salesperson a mile away? It's the smell of neediness and desperation. This is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Listen to my client, Bethany Bredegar with Sonatrol Pacific, share her experience learning how to stop selling and become a trusted advisor.
Everything you teach is centered around not doing what the customer customer expect that dance that you do back and forth that I was stuck doing and didn't like my job when I was having to do that, and changed my actual job description and the way that I interact with clients so much so that now I feel very proud of what I do, and I love going to work, and I don't feel like I'm getting caught in that dance anymore. I'm able to actually talk to people, and they forget I'm a salesperson because of these techniques. They end up selling it themselves, and I feel like I'm not even selling.
Stop the buyer-seller dance and learn to love your career again. Call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275, or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com.
You can hire a personal trainer to get your body in shape. You can hire a golf pro to get your swing in shape. How about hiring a trainer to get your sales team in shape? Sandler Training can show you how and why salespeople fail. They'll share the most common mistakes and how to avoid them. Sandler Training programs will guide managers and their teams with tips, techniques, and proven methods to close the deal. New and veteran sales reps can make costly mistakes. Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
So far, I've been talking with Sandler trainer Bob Bolak, and we've been covering the topic of vulnerability, transparency, and that role that it plays in not only a salesperson, but also in a leader. Bob's going to take us through a little bit more detail. We were talking about people tend to act out a programmed script. And what we mean by that is our 70% of what we do and say in any day is a rehearsed or programmed response, as opposed to being in that place of awareness. So what role does this have in managing uncomfortable interactions with other humans?
Jim, the thing I think of, Dr. Cartman's drama triangle, this is something you can research if you just look up Cartman's triangle, but essentially what Cartman said is, he said, anytime we've got interaction where we've got some contentiousness, some discomfort, anxiety, we can draw a triangle, and there's going to be three players in that triangle. Sometimes the players can be me, myself, playing all three of the roles. Other times it could be other folks. And we'll give you the model here real quick and then a quick illustration. And let's just take the left point of the triangle might be what we would call the victim in the interaction. The right point of the triangle might be what we would call the persecutor. And then the other point of the triangle might be someone we would call the rescuer. And I'll give you a pretty good example. As a child growing up, I was the youngest child. And my dad was usually pretty unhappy when I would leave his tools out on the front lawn after I was working on my bike, and they'd be all rusty the next morning. And he'd call me on the carpet with it, and he'd say, "Who left these tools on the front yard?" And I'd say, "Well, my sister and her friends were beating up on me and chasing me around, and so I had no choice because I had to run in the house to seek refuge." And then my dad would say, "That's no excuse." And then my mom would pop up and say, "He's just an 11-year-old boy." So the part of the persecutor was my father, the part of the victim was played by me, and the part of the rescuer was played by my mother. And in this drama, Jim, nothing good is ever going to happen. No truth, no solution, nothing good. And it happens all the time in our professional and sales lives without us even knowing that we're playing this drama out.
Such a great analogy. And that drama not only plays out in our work life, but in our personal lives. And like Bob suggested, it also plays out solo in our own mind. So, Bob, how do I manage the players in those drama games that we get sucked into?
Well, the antidote, Jim, for Cartman's triangle or the drama triangle is what we'll call the winner's triangle. And the three points of the winner's triangle are to be nurturing, to be vulnerable, and to be assertive. And a quick example of that may be in a professional role. Let's just take a sales leader, and a sales leader sitting there with a salesperson who's not performing very well. And the sales leader, by the way, Jim, is under a lot of pressure from their boss to have their team deliver. And so there the salesperson is maybe acting as the victim. Hey, our product team isn't giving me what I need to sell. The sales manager wants to be a persecutor and say, "Hey, you've got to still sell what we have. You've agreed to these quotas." But instead, they go into the winner's triangle and they say, "You know what? I think it is difficult right now with some of these products to get the kind of traction that we want. In fact, I want to share with you, I was on a call last week, and I know that I bombed it because I went to the wrong place in my mindset, and I really didn't fight through that with the prospect using my questioning techniques and getting to the real issues and pains that we could solve. So what I'm going to suggest is that you and I, Mr. and Ms. Salesperson, do some role play here, and let's get through those head trash, self-limiting beliefs that you have and get you to go out and do that behavior and maybe some journaling, and I will help you. I'll be your personal coach, but I'm not going to do the work for you. It's going to be important for you to do it, Mr. or Ms. Salesperson. And the thing I want you to note there, Jim, is I'm going to help if I'm nurturing, assertive, and vulnerable as a leader, but I'm only going to help with boundaries. And so your thoughts on that technique, Jim?
Strikes me that when you take a leadership role as a persecutor, oftentimes it's a response to pressure you're feeling. And as you mentioned in this example, here's a manager who's feeling the pressure to meet a goal or quota. And if you take that path that says, hey, I'm counting on you, why didn't you do? And it has any of that accusatory tone, you actually trigger a response in the person that you're managing of being defensive. And when everybody listening knows that when you're defensive, you aren't listening, you're just protecting. You're hunkering down and trying to figure out, how do I defend myself? And the approach that Bob is suggesting using the winner's triangle really opens the person who is being challenged up to challenge themselves instead of defend themselves. So what are those 3 points of the winner's triangle?
Sure, Jim. The first one was going to be nurturing, right? So to really watch my tonality so that I don't less likely to trigger that kind of childlike defensiveness. The second one is going to be that vulnerability. Hey, you know, I've struggled with this myself. I'm willing to share that with you as your leader. And the last one's going to be that assertiveness where at the end of the day, using my sort of adult perspective on the world, I'm going to state it as it is, wrapped in that nurturingness so that we can cut through a lot of the junk and get to the point of let's resolve this if it's resolvable by working together as quickly as we can.
Bob brought up a point about boundaries that I think needs emphasized. The best way to guide somebody and govern somebody with assertively establishing boundaries, what many leaders tend to do is they cross the line from assertive to aggressive, and that usually doesn't turn out well. So help the listeners understand that difference between being assertive versus being aggressive.
Well, I'm going to model some vulnerability here, Jim. In my explanation, I left out something very important in that on-the-fly manager role play. What I did not do that I would do the next time that I do this, so there's some growth for me, is to ask for permission to help. I said, why don't we do this instead of, hey, Jim, would it make some sense if you and I did X? Are you open to that? And you'll notice, Jim, I left that out. And so that could be perceived to be overbearing and aggressive. I think help without the invitation or agreement for help is one of those things that could be overbearing. Is that what you were looking at there?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think when you open yourself up by asking if you can provide, and of course, if you're the manager, you think, I don't need to ask, it's my job. We want you to ask because by asking, you open the receptivity of the person you're coaching and mentoring so that they actually want help instead of you intruding on their world and superimposing your process to them. So, Bob, any last thoughts or comments before we close out this segment and move into our next segment?
Absolutely, Jim. You just teed up, I think, the exclamation point for this idea of the manager in the winner's triangle versus the drama triangle, and it's this. As a sales leader, as a manager, I really want commitment. I don't want compliance. If I bulldoze my way in there and use my authority without getting permission to help, no boundaries, going in as a persecutor, I've got compliance, not commitment.
That's a great point. Bob Bollock's my guest today. Bob, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Yeah, B as in boy, another B as in boy, O-L-A-K at Sandler.com.
And I'm Idaho's CEO of Sandler Training, Jim Stevens. If you like this show and want to subscribe to our content, reach out to us by email, crossroads@sandler.com. That's crossroads@sandler.com. Or you can reach out and ask us how to subscribe by calling 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. If you're a business owner who's thinking about selling or transitioning your firm to your employees, and you're not sure if you'll be able to achieve your dream of a successful transition, call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. I will help you determine what actions will be required to position your business for a successful transition. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, we're ready to help. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. This is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Insanity is doing the same thing the same way, expecting different results. Change is difficult and messy. As a result, most people push themselves to work harder because they don't realize there's an alternative. Sheer willpower and determination can only go so far in making a significant impact. Charisma or optimism alone is not enough to capture your ideal client at a price point that allows you to grow your business. Loyalty to employees and clients sustains a devoted following, but will not attract the talent or clients needed to help more people benefit from your services. Accurate systems and processes are vital. However, this alone is not going to achieve your desired results. Most business owners don't have the courage necessary to challenge their comfort zone. If you are the exception and are ready to roll up your sleeves, get messy, and change, call me at Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. Or connect on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. Bob, so far we've talked about the conceptual. I'd like us to shift gears and talk a little more detail about the conceptuals. I don't suppose you'd be willing to take us through some exercises or practices that might help us develop that vulnerability.
Well, and Jim, I'd be willing to, as long as you're willing to model a little vulnerability here for a man or woman that's there listening today.
Oh my gosh, right on the air. I'll do it, but it's going to be a stretch.
Well, I think we've got a little bit of clay here to work with Jim Stevens. We'll see if we can mold you a little bit.
Thank you. I look forward to it. So in thinking about modeling and molding vulnerability, what's the first step? What are some of the things that I should do if I'm at that point in my life where I'm thinking, you know what, I do tend to be more of a persecutor, or I tend to be more of a victim or a rescuer, and I probably should be better at establishing adult boundaries, and I'm thinking that winner's triangle where I'm modeling vulnerability, assertiveness, and nurturing is probably the key. How do you condition me to change my ways?
Well, one of the first things I really want to look at, Jim, is how natural humility is to you. And we talked about without true humility, I may not even have the ability to conceptualize what vulnerability looks or sounds like. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions here, Jim. Let's just see if you can, you know, share back with me. You're there listening in the office or in the car right now. You might just walk through this exercise in your mind. And the first thing I'm going to ask you, Jim, is what are three things in your business right now that you're working on that you're not very good at? Could be the selling, could be the training and consulting, or even the business operator. But three things, Jim, that you really, you know, you could improve on.
Well, the first one that comes to mind is prospecting. I'm actually good at it. I just hate it. I don't like doing it. And so I find all sorts of things that I can do to avoid it.
And you're not alone, Jim, with me or any of your listeners. What else?
The second thing that comes to mind is when I have a meeting with someone, I always end it with a clearly defined next step. And I tend to schedule my day so that I go from meeting to meeting to meeting. And by the end of the day, when I'm thinking, okay, now what did I need to do? I've forgotten. You would think that I'm almost 60 years old. After having this problem for years, don't you think I'd learn to write it down? But I keep repeating the same stupid thing over and over again. I rack my brain at the end of the day. Now, what was I supposed to do? So I guess that would be number two.
And also, it's not uncommon for a top performer to try to put the 10 pounds of stuff in the 5-pound bag. Last thing that comes to mind, Jim.
Let's see. I guess for the last thing is that my emotional expression under pressure is anger. And when I get mad, it's not helpful. And I tend to vent. And my behavior style, after I vent, I feel better. But anybody that was in the crosshairs doesn't. And so learning to just control my emotional expression and rein in my anger.
Great self-awareness, Jim. Appreciate you going there. Let's do the three things now that you're great at. in terms of your business, just the God-given gifts that you have, what comes to mind?
The first gift truly is a God-given gift, and it's the gift of discernment. And it shows up when I'm in a meeting and I'm either coaching or it could be a sales call, and I'm listening for the underlying issues and the personal impact. I'm really good at hearing and then helping play back to the other person what I've heard in a way that they feel like, wow, I'd never have put it into words, but that's exactly right.
And not everybody has that. What a gift. The next thing, Jim?
My brain thinks in terms of models, and so I am good at seeing patterns of behavior or broken systems in organizations, and it serves me well in helping people stop self-defeating behaviors or change processes in their company that's not working.
And then the third thing.
Let's see. The third thing that I think I'm really good at is I think I'm great at speaking. Sounds so egotistical, but I'm a good trainer and I'm a good storyteller. My dad was a great storyteller. I've listened to many hundreds of hours of his stories, so I think he gave me that gift.
So, Jim, just a quick debrief. First of all, great job. How did it feel, or how challenging was it for you to do the first part, the things that I want to need to improve on? Difficult or not necessarily? And I'm asking that without any judgment.
Well, I think on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 is that was really easy. 1 is I can't believe how painful that was. I'm somewhere there in the middle. I would say maybe between a 4 and a 5. It's painful, especially when you don't have any idea who's hearing it, and it has the power of going everywhere. So I'd say difficult, challenging.
Not to mention that your business is based on consulting and coaching people to improve on even some of the things you're working
right,
on.
Right, that's a great point.
So really, really gutsy, Jim. Very courageous. How about the other part, Jim? How challenging or was it not to go into, hey, these are the things that are really gifts that I'm great at?
I think the first two were less challenging because I'm cognizant of those. I don't take credit for them. They're God-given gifts. The third one was a little bit more difficult because it seemed self-aggrandizing.
Well, and we saw the parental scripting there, Jim, pop out, and you know the exact moment it happened.
Yeah.
You said it sounds egotistical. And wasn't that interesting? But all Jim was doing was stating a fact, and I know Jim, and he actually does have a gift of being an orator and a speaker, and what the parental script kicked in. So, Jim, I hope what the listeners picked up from what you just shared was the ability to be able to look at both sides. Humility isn't just the negative stuff. Some of us are good with the negative stuff because we've been scripted to be critical. Others of us are not able to look at the good stuff. And again, I'm going to submit to you, you're going to have a tough time with vulnerability if you're not able to look at both things objectively as an adult without that parental scripting or the childlike reaction to emotion.
One of the things Bob mentioned in the previous segment was the importance of journaling. So I would really recommend to the listeners, take a few minutes and write down the answers to those questions so that you have a time to go through this on your own and experience emotionally, because we don't have time for me to express really the emotions that I was feeling, but it was an emotionally engaging conversation, even though it's a transparent practice that we're doing here. So Bob, in conclusion, take the listeners through the 3 steps or the 6 steps that you led me through so they can jot it down and journal on it.
Certainly, Jim. And I'm going to suggest that as you journal it, you may even walk through this exercise with your sales leader, manager, coach. If you don't have a coach, get one,
yeah.
An objective person, but it could be a significant other, somebody you trust, and share with them, hey, here's 3 things I'm working on my business. It could even be personal that I know that I need to improve on, want to improve on, could, and then share that. Listen to your inner voices. If they're highly critical, or as we heard with Jim, you know, hey, this sounds egotistical, because those are markers you can come back to. And then you'll do the same thing on the things that you want to acknowledge that are gifts, that are things you're great at. And we're really looking for balance there, because without one, it may not do the other one in a healthy way. And I'll leave you with this, Jim. We give behavioral assessments to anybody that we train because we want to take a look at the way they're built and constructed. And one of those behavioral things we look at is something called ego. And I think ego is very misunderstood in a sales role. I will see time and time again, Jim, if a salesperson or leader is low in ego, it is not healthy in terms of their productivity. And where it gets misaligned is we've been taught that high ego means self-absorption. And it really means, in terms of this exercise, I have balance and centeredness in terms of not being grandiose, yet understanding that I do have strengths. And now I can be vulnerable because it won't kill me, because I know that I'm still a strong person.
And the ultimate goal in this exercise is, I'm guessing, Bob, if I do it frequently enough, I will become very comfortable with both verbalizing the areas I'm working on and the areas I'm good at in such a way that I'm able to be non-judgmental and transparent as I'm sharing with others. Is that fair?
It's authentic, Jim. That's it's the ability to be honest with myself and others, because to say that I have gifts, that I have no strengths, I'm not good at anything, it's not possible. We all have that. So to be so self-effacing is actually what I would call false humility, and that doesn't get me anywhere near true vulnerability. And as you mentioned earlier, when the person sitting across the table from me looks at me as a real person, as a healthy person, gosh, it is super, super strong in an interaction.
My guest today is Bob Bolak. Bob, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
B as in boy, another B as in boy, O-L-A-K at Sandler.com.
And this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. My call is to wake people up from the slumber of mediocrity. Are you tired of forgiving your employees for not trying? Are you bored with the daily ritual of at least or just enough that haunt you over the weekend? Are you ready to test yourself and see if you could do it? Are you ready to test your team? Call us at 208-429-9275. Ask to set up a discovery meeting and we'll engage in a conversation together. This is Sandler Training, where you find power in reinforcement. Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. If you're a business owner who's thinking about selling or transitioning your firm to your employees, and you're not sure if you'll be able to achieve your dream of a successful transition, call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. I will help you determine what actions will be required to position your business for a successful transition. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, we're ready to help. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
Welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm with trainer Bob Bolak. Now, Bob, Sandler is a trial of ongoing reinforcement and commitment. I'd like you to walk us through some of the frustrations, concerns, intimacies that have developed in your life through this learned transparency.
Because our topic today, Jim, is the vulnerable salesperson and leader, is it okay if I share a few areas that I'm working on in my game and I'll model some vulnerability from here?
That would be awesome. Just remember, we've got an audience. People are listening.
Well, I stand in front of a group of 30, 40 people that I'm training each week in my sales mastery class, which I call the Sales Mastery Gym. It's a place for salespeople to go and work on their sales muscles each week. And I share this stuff, Jim, and I'm happy to do it, because I don't think somebody in a role like ours has credibility if they play it as though they don't have any challenges.
Absolutely,
right?
True.
Yeah. So I've got a couple, and you just tell me when to stop.
Okay, all right.
Going. This Bob Bolak guy is a work in progress. You know, the thing that is the most challenging in my sales process, Jim, and I'm not a master at this point, but I think I'm pretty good with understanding what we do in this selling system, and I'm sure all your listeners that sell have a selling system that they're following too, and they probably got a budget step in that process where they get a really well-defined way to figure out, number one, if money's available, and number two, if the customer client prospect is willing to invest it, not only money, but resources. So Jim, I get to that point in the process, and I know what I'm supposed to do, and I have what's called a conceptual breakdown. And you know from Sandler that, you know, we're going to be talking about behavior, which is doing the thing. We're going to be talking about technique. How do you do it? Which is what most people think that people like you and me teach. I certainly do. But then we're going to be talking about our belief systems. And when I know how to do the technique, Jim, it would be behavior, and I don't do it. It's conceptual breakdown. So frustrating to me that to this day, I still struggle with the budget step. And here's what happens, Jim. I'll be in a conversation and I've got a prospect in front of me and they do have pain and issues that we work in and we deal with, and I have a hard time holding to getting them to share what their number is, and I will collapse and I'll cave too quickly and I'll put a number out there. Mm. And you know, it's not fair to them, Jim, because their return on investment and their perspective of what they're willing to invest is indicative of their commitment, gives me the information I need to see, A, if I can help them and meet their expectations within the resources available, but B, to see if that's even enough. Mm. So by me shortcutting that process, Jim, I'm not running as effective of a sales call. You know, I'm working on it in many different ways. In fact, I've got a coaching call coming up with another Sandler trainer here, and back to coaching and the value of having a coach, and he's going to work me through how he does it. Mm. And I'm going to improve on that. I know I will.
You know, the disconnect that happens during a sales process in any one of the stages is very common, but most people lack the awareness to recognize it. And it's interesting, Bob, that you not only recognize it, but embedded in your recognition is really the solution. So it's almost like I know the problem, I know what to do about it, but I'm just not doing anything. What do you think that roadblock is?
Well, I think what's happening, Jim, and by the way, going back to benchmarking assessments, I know many of the sales leaders or managers listening here are using assessments so they can go back to, you know, real science in terms of why this stuff is happening. In my makeup, Jim, my negotiation score, a scale of 0 to 9, it is a 2. Mm-hmm. And again, if you're a sales leader out there and you're hiring salespeople or managing them, I sure hope that you have that data, that you know, you know, what the, and so I saw that score, Jim, and when I first took this, I thought, oh my gosh, how can that be? It's interesting, Jim. I'm a D dominant style. I want to win. I am a horribly ruthless negotiator. But what ends up happening is I get impatient, and so I fold quickly to eliminate any tension, to make the process keep moving. And as you know, Jim and Sandler, we teach slow the process down to get to a better conclusion faster. Mm-hmm. And that's where it stems from, Jim. I've got this kind of scripting to, you know, just hurry up and get there instead of, you know, hanging in there in that budget step until it develops. And really, Jim, if you were my coach, I know you'd tell me, you know, the thing I need to share with a customer, the prospect, is if they can't share a number or something they're comfortable with, then we can't continue.
Yeah.
And by me continuing, Jim, I end up at a place oftentimes called Wimp Junction,
right,
where I may find myself doing premature presentation.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't want to teach that my customers, clients, and prospects don't want to do that and then do it myself,
yeah,
because then that makes me a fraud.
Do you, off the top of your head, remember what your conflict score was, conflict management score?
Very low, Jim.
Yeah.
I'm about a 2. I don't like conflict, and that rates back to childhood with a sister that was a child of the 70s that challenged my mom and dad. I was a 5-year-old looking at all the hostility, and so I've got that peacemaker script,
yeah,
and if the prospect gets uncomfortable, then I won't dig my heels in. I will retreat or gloss over it, and I will send you your check for the therapy, Jim. It always goes back to childhood scripting,
yeah,
doesn't it?
No, it really does. And somebody who has that low score in negotiating and low score in conflict, they actually default to rescuing. They tend to, I don't want the other person to feel uncomfortable, so I'll actually negotiate on their behalf.
And I end up giving them the number, and then it's my number and not their number,
right,
and now we have a problem.
Right. Yeah, and in some cases, you're going to find, I'm sure you have, that you're not getting a number unless you give at least some sort of a range. So I think it's very easy to be too hard on ourselves, especially those of us that train Sandler, to follow it by the letter. We say the best sales call is the one that the buyer never hears. They don't hear the process. It's just a conversation. So there is, here's me rescuing you, Bob. You might be being too hard on yourself.
Well, I think that what I've realized, Jim, just to put a bow on this topic, is that, you know, in Sandler and you know, many folks here have, you know, years of selling experience, bracketing pricing and budget is perfectly acceptable, but it's something that happens in the process once we've identified that customer, client, prospect really does need the help.
Yeah,
and what I'm
yeah.
doing, Jim, is I'm going there too fast
too soon
because of my head crash. And as I grow in my business, this is costing me, Jim, you know, thousands. I mean, it's probably costing me at least $100,000 a year in, maybe not income, but in revenue.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about the impact of pain. I know what I would spend that money on if I had it. So as I said, I've got a call scheduled on the calendar to do some coaching with a Sandler trainer, and we'll see if we can't work on Bob Bolak's head trash, which will be behaviors, number one, to actually do the thing, and number two, to do a lot of journaling to see if we can't rewrite some of those self-limiting beliefs that are getting in the way.
It's interesting. Bob has brought up a couple of points that I want want to just highlight. One is that he understands that we won't change unless there's a compelling reason to do so. And the compelling reason, in Sandler words, is pain by numbers. If I know the cost of pain and it's expensive enough, I will change. And the other thing that Bob is doing that is something for all of us to model is having that openness to ask for help, which in most business owners, leaders, and managers, that is just so difficult. So, Bob, we're out of time for this final segment. Any wrap-up thoughts you'd like to share?
Just one small thing, Jim. When we quantify pain and we get the money, you know, impact, great. But I said something that I know you picked up on. For me, my pain isn't really the money. It's not the couple $100,000. It's that I teach this and I don't want to be a fraud.
Yeah.
That's my pain. And that's the real motivator for me to fix this.
The pain of hypocrisy.
Absolutely.
When I have my clients quantify pain, I look for five areas. One is time, money, emotional energy, physical health, and then legacy or impact on your family. If you look at those five areas and find out what is your cost of not changing, that may help stimulate our listeners to say, you know what, I'm going to get out of my comfort zone, I'm going to make that phone call, and I'm going to ask for help. Bob, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Yeah, and I would say that if you're listening to this, you're probably in Idaho, and Jim Stevens is the guy you should probably call. If for
you,
some
Bob.
Reason you want to call on this trainer like me that can't do a lot, you know, can't even do a budget step, it's B as in boy again, OLAK@Sandler.com.
Bob, you've been a great guest. Thank you so much for being on the program. And listeners, thank you so much for inviting us into your world. I'm Jim Stevens, and my call is to wake people up from the slumber of mediocrity. If you are trapped in a comfort zone, frustrated because you're living with just good enough, if you're accepting chaos and volatility in daily business and customer relationship, or if you're prone to learn the hard way through trial and error, hoping that you'll figure it out eventually, if you're ready to give up the insanity of repetition, call me at 208-429-9275. Have a great weekend, and remember, if you measure it, you'll manage it.